Bami's cries had mixed with Amara's yell to swim for it! And Luis and Amara hopped over the side, half swimming, half tumbling toward shore.
No! Wait!
Isabel cried. Her mother couldn't swim for the beach. Not like this. They had to paddle in or her mother would never make it to the U.S. Isabel and Papi and Señor Castillo rowed as hard as they could. But the Coast Guard ship was faster. It was going to catch them.
Go!
Isabel's mother told her husband between pants.
If you're caught, they'll send you back.
No,
Papi said.
Go!
Mommy said again.
If I'm caught, they'll just send me back to Cuba. Go and take Isabel. You can send money like you always planned. No!
Isabel cried, and amazingly, her father agreed.
Never, he insisted. I need you, Teresa. You and Isabel and little Mariano.
Isabel's mother sobbed at the name, and tears sprang to Isabel's eyes, too. Like the boat, they had never settled on a name for the baby. Not until now. Naming the baby after Lito was the perfect way to remember him, no matter where they were.
But they'll send us back,
Mommy sobbed.
Then we'll go back, Papi said. Together.
He put his forehead to his wife's temple and held her hand, taking Señora Castillo's place as Mommy made her last push. The Coast Guard ship bounced in the waves. It was almost on top of them.
It's time, Señor Castillo said. We have to swim for it. Now!
No, please,
Isabel begged. Paddling helplessly against the tide, tears running down her face. They were so close. But Señor Castillo was already helping his wife over the side into the water. They were abandoning ship. Isabel's mother cried out louder than before, but Papi was with her. He would take care of her. All that mattered now was rowing, rowing as hard as Isabel could. She was her mother's last hope.
Take Isabel with you,
she heard her mother say between pushes. But Isabel wasn't worried. She knew her father wouldn't listen, that he would never leave. Neither of them would. They were a family. They would be together, forever. But then suddenly arms were picking her up, lifting her over the side.
Say goodbye to Fidel,
Señor Castillo said. He was the one Mommy had been talking to. He had come back, and he was the one lifting Isabel out of the boat and into the water.
No! No!
Isabel cried.
You saved my life once. Now let me save yours,
Señor Castillo told her. Isabel didn't listen. She kicked and screamed, trying to get free. She didn't want to go to the States if it meant leaving her parents, her family, behind. But Señor Castillo was too strong. He tossed her in the water, and she sank under the waves in a tangle of arms and legs and bubbles before quickly hitting bottom. Isabel found her footing and pushed herself back up out of the water. It was chest deep, and the waves that slid by her toward shore lifted her up and set her down again on the sand. Iván's cap had come off her head in her splashdown, and she snatched it up before it disappeared in the surf. Then she grabbed the side of the boat to climb back in. Señor Castillo's arm went around her waist and pulled her away.
No!
Isabel cried.
I won't leave them!
Hush! We're not going anywhere, Señor Castillo said. Help us pull the boat to shore!
Isabel looked around, and for the first time she saw that Señora Castillo was still there, and Luis and Amara were there too. They all stood waist-deep in the water around the boat. They had come back. They all found somewhere to grab onto the boat and pull, churning up the sand at their feet. Isabel sobbed with relief and grabbed hold. It was harder for her to pull when the waves kept lifting her, but the sight of the Coast Guard boat bearing down on them helped motivate her. So did the cheering. The other refugees on the Coast Guard ship were hopping up and down and clapping and yelling encouragement, just like the crowd on the beach had when they'd left Havana. Isabel saw her grandfather running up and down the ship, waving them toward shore like a baseball player urging a home run ball around the foul pole. She laughed in spite of herself. The water was just below Isabel's waist. They were almost there. The Coast Guard ship cut its engines to run up to them, and that's when Isabel heard her baby brother cry out for the first time. The sound stunned Isabel and the others into stillness. It took her father a moment to cut the umbilical cord with his pocket knife. Then he stood up in the boat with something tiny and brown, staring down at it like he held the world's most incredible treasure in his arms. Isabel gaped. All this time she had known her mother was having a baby. Isabel had seen plenty of babies before. They were cute, but nothing special. But this wasn't just a baby. This was her brother. She had never met him before this moment, but she loved him now with a deepness she had never felt before, not even toward Iván. This was Mariano, her little brother, and she suddenly wanted to do anything and everything she could to protect him. Papi finally looked up from his newborn son.
"Help me get Teresa out of the boat," he told the others.
The Coast Guard ship was almost alongside the boat, and the adults scrambled for the other side. Papi bent down over the bow and held out her crying baby brother to Isabel. As if in a dream, Isabel's arms reached up and took him. He was covered with something slimy and gross, and was screaming like somebody had slapped him. But he was the most amazing thing Isabel had ever seen. Little Mariano. Isabel hugged him protectively against the push and pull of the waves. He was so tiny, so light. What if she stumbled? What if she dropped him? How could her father put something so new, so precious, in her arms? But then she understood. Isabel had to carry little Mariano to shore so her father and the others could carry Mommy behind them.
"Go, Isabel," her father told her,
and she went. Isabel held the baby up high to keep him out of the waves that pushed them both to shore, stumbling as the water crashed against the back of her legs, but step by step, she staggered up onto the beach. Onto United States soil. Isabel turned in the sand, soaking wet and exhausted, to look behind her. Papi and Amara and the Castillos were on their feet, carrying Isabel's mother through the shallow water, where the Coast Guard boat couldn't go. The ship had cut its lights and was backing out to sea. On the rear of the boat, among the waving, cheering refugees, was Isabel's grandfather. Isabel held the screaming baby up high for him to see, and Lito fell to his knees, hands clasped to his chest. Then the engines roared, the sea churned, and the Coast Guard ship disappeared out to sea. The Castillo and Fernandez families helped each other up onto the sandy beach, and their wet feet became dry feet. Señor Castillo fell to his knees and kissed the ground. They had made it to the States, to freedom. Still in a dream, Isabel wobbled up the sand toward the flashing lights and thumping music and dancing people. She stepped into the light, and the music stopped, and everyone turned to stare. Then suddenly, people were running to help her and her family. A tan young woman in a bikini dropped into the sand beside Isabel.
"Oh my God, chiquita," she said in Spanish. "Did you just come off a boat? Are you Cuban?"
"Yes," Isabel said. She was trembling, but she clung to Mariano like she would never let him go. I'm from Cuba,
Isabel said.
But my little brother was born here. He's an American, and soon I will be too.
Mahmoud, Hungary to Germany, 2015. 17 days from home. Hungarian people on both sides of the road stopped and stared as Mahmoud and the rest of the refugees marched down the middle of the highway. Men, women, children, they had all come pouring out of the detention center after Mahmoud, joined by the UN observers, and the police had done nothing to stop them. The refugees stretched from one side of the northbound lane to the other, blocking cars from passing them. Packs of young Syrian men walked and laughed together. A Palestinian woman pushed a stroller with a sleeping girl in it. An Afghan family sang a song. The refugees wore jeans and sneakers and hoodies tied around their waists and carried what little they still owned in backpacks and trash bags. Mahmoud's father and mother found him and Walid in the crowd.
Mahmoud, what are you doing? His father cried. We're walking to Austria, Walid said.
Dad showed them the map on his phone.
But it's a 12-hour walk, he said.
We can do it, Mahmoud said. We've already come this far. We can go just a little farther.
Mahmoud's mother pulled him into a hug, and then Walid, and soon their father had joined them. Refugees streamed around them, and when Mahmoud's mother let them all go, she was smiling and crying at the same time. Cars honked behind the marchers, trying to get past. More cars stopped on the other side of the highway to honk and cheer them on or boo them. A police van pulled up on the opposite side of the road, and through a loudspeaker, a policeman told everyone in Arabic, "Stop, or you will be arrested!" But no one stopped, and no one was arrested. Mahmoud and his family walked with the crowd for hours, visible, exposed. It was scary, but energizing too. They marched quietly, calmly, flashing peace signs at people who cheered them on from the sidelines. Police cars with spinning red lights paced them on the other side of the road, occasionally weep-weeping to warn some car away. News helicopters flew overhead, and a woman from the New York Times worked her way through the crowd, asking Mahmoud questions and interviewing refugees. See us, Mahmoud thought. Hear us. Help us. 12 hours had seemed like nothing when Mahmoud added up all the time they'd been walking since they'd left Aleppo. But this walk quickly seemed endless. They had no water and no food, and Mahmoud's stomach growled and his lips were dry. He felt like one of the zombies from his favorite video game. All he wanted to do was lie down and sleep. But Mahmoud knew they couldn't stop. If they stopped, the Hungarians would arrest them. They had to keep moving forward, always forward, even if it killed them. Later that night, Mahmoud and his family at last reached the border of Austria. There was no fence, no wall, no border checkpost. Just a blue traffic sign by the side of the road with the words Republik Österreich inside the EU's circle of gold stars, and above it, a sign with the red and white flag of Austria. The Hungarian police cars stopped following them as soon as they stepped across the border, and the refugees paused to hug each other and celebrate their escape. Mahmoud fell to his knees, fighting back tears of exhaustion and happiness. They had made it. It wasn't Germany, not yet, but Germany was just one country away. The refugees were still laughing and congratulating each other when the phone Mahmoud's father carried beeped an alarm. So did another phone, and another, until the whole crowd was a chorus of alarms. It was time for the Isha prayer, the last prayer of the day. Mahmoud's dad used an app called Aysalam to find the exact direction they should face to pray to Mecca. Mahmoud's family found a patch of grass all to themselves, and the hundreds of other refugees did the same, and soon they were all bowing and praying together. It wasn't ideal. They were supposed to wash themselves and pray in a clean place, but it was more important to pray at the right time than in the right place. As he recited the first chapter of the Quran, Mahmud thought about the words, "Thee alone we worship, and thee alone we ask for help. Show us the straight path." Their path had been anything but straight, but Allah had delivered them to this place. With His blessings, they might actually reach Germany. When Mahmud finished his prayers and opened his eyes, he saw a small group of Austrians had gathered at the edges of the praying refugees. There were police officers there too, and more cars with flashing lights. Mahmud sagged. "They only see us when we do something they don't like," he thought again. The refugees had stopped to get down on their knees and pray, and these people watching them didn't do that, didn't understand. Now the refugees looked foreign again, alien, like they didn't belong. Mahmud worried what the crowd might do when the Austrians told them they didn't want them. Their march through Hungary had been peaceful until now. Would this turn into another fight that would see them gassed and handcuffed and thrown into prison again?
"Welcome to Austria,"
one of the Austrians said, in heavily accented Arabic, and others yelled, "Willkommen!" and applauded. Actually applauded them. Mahmud looked around at Walid, who was as stunned as Mahmud. Was this some mistake? Did these people think they were something other than Syrian refugees? Suddenly, they were surrounded by Austrians, men, women, and children, all smiling and trying to shake their hands and give them things. A woman gave Mahmud's mother a handful of clean clothes, and a man worried over his father's cuts and bruises. A boy about Mahmud's age, wearing a New York Yankees jersey, handed him a plastic shopping bag with bread and cheese and fruit and a bottle of water in it. Mahmud was so thankful he almost wept.
"Thank you," Mahmud said in Arabic.
"Bitte," the boy said, which Mahmud guessed was German for "you're welcome." The Austrians, they learned, had seen their march on the television and had come out to help them. It was like that all the way up the road to Nickelsdorf, the closest Austrian town with a train station. White, native-born Austrians and olive-skinned Arab Austrians who had recently immigrated to the country filled the overpasses, throwing bottles of water and food down to them, bread, fresh fruit, bags of chips. A man next to Mahmud caught a whole grilled chicken wrapped in aluminum foil.
"We are with you! Go with God!"
a woman shouted down to them in Arabic. Mahmud's heart lifted. They weren't invisible anymore, hidden away in the detention center. People were finally seeing them, and good people were helping them. At last, Mahmud and his family reached the Nickelsdorf train station, where they bought tickets to Vienna, the capital of Austria. They traveled overnight by train, and when they arrived in Vienna the next morning, they bought tickets to Munich, a large city in Germany. In Munich, the response was the same as in Austria, only bigger. There were thousands of refugees at the train station, and moving among them were hundreds of regular German people, offering bottles of water and cups of coffee and tea. One couple had brought a basket full of candy and were handing pieces out to children. Mahmud and Walid joined the happy mob of kids around them and each got a couple of candies, which they wolfed down. A more organized effort was unloading a truck full of fresh fruit, and another group was handing out diapers to anyone with babies. Seeing the diapers reminded Mahmud of Hannah, and he looked up at his mother. He could tell she was thinking of his baby sister, too. She put a hand to her mouth, and soon she was working her way through the crowd again, asking anyone and everyone if they had seen her daughter. But no one had seen or heard of a baby plucked from the water. If the people who had rescued her made it to safety, though, they were likely somewhere here in Germany. Mahmud and his family would just have to keep looking. An official-looking German man with a name tag that said Serhat, a Turkish name, approached Mahmud's father with a clipboard in hand. "Are you and your family seeking asylum in Germany?" he asked in perfect Arabic. Mahmud held his breath. Was this it? Was the end of their long, horrible nightmare near? Could they finally stop moving?